Really great to be here to bask in the light of great minds in this audience and to see so many young people who are enthusiastic about cell migration research. So I'll tell you about the kind of new direction that my group is going into based on the fascinating experimental system. And Lionel Christian, who is actually French, he introduced me to this system. He was at NYU until recently. He is now director of institute at Bergen. And Yelena is the experimental postdoc who did most of the experimental work. Now another experimental student is continuing this work. And modeling in the first part of the talk is done by my two former postdocs. So you will see that I will touch upon the concept of supracellularity, which I'm very enthusiastic about. It was introduced by Shellard and Mayer. And I think from those cartoons, it's pretty much clear what this means. When we have collective cell migration, cells can either loosely coordinate their migration, or they can integrate into supracells, so that cells at the rear of the group behave like the rear of a single giant cell. At the front, they behave as protrusive structures at the front of the cell, and in the middle, the cells are different from both rear and the front. And so the organism that we work with is Siona. You can read some fascinating facts about it here. Also is known as a C-squared. This is one of the well-known developmental biology experimental systems. It's not as famous as Drosophila or C. elegans, but it has some absolutely crucial applications to understanding how development works. Why we picked Siona for cell migration research is that at certain stage of embryo development, all the cells in this organism are staying put, and only a pair of cells migrates together. So in a way, this is the simplest possible cell migration system. There are actually two pairs of cells, as we'll see, that are kind of identical, but they migrate separately from each other. So another interesting aspect of this system is that those cells are not only collective, but they're very three-dimensional, and they migrate squeezing between between tissues. So this collective cell migration system has all the most important features of general cell migration, yet there's just a couple of cells. Finally, I want to mention that the cells are migrating basically on the stiff floor, which is epidermis. And from the top, they are squeezed by elastic and deformable ceiling, which is endoderm. So that's another very interesting part of this problem. So we can, of course, track the cells. So you see nuclei of those two cells migrating together. They're leaving behind two other so-called ACM cells. So those cells will start the muscle system of the embryo, and these TVC cells will become a heart eventually. So what happens is a little bit maybe hard to imagine from this movie, but basically those cells are migrating from the trunk to the body, and the geometry is kind of like this. Those two pairs, they migrate like this, unite here, and then start dividing. So there are many questions about this cell migration system. And I mostly will pose the questions in this talk, and I'll have very few answers. We are kind of in the beginning of this journey. We had one paper last year in eLife, which you can read, but it gives answers to only small parts of these questions. So those are the large questions. How is collective polarization emerging and maintained? What you'll see is that the cells have a very clear leader and very clear trailer, and how this leader-trailer order is emerging is a big question. You will see that two cells in certain sense are supracellular, and then how this supracellular shape is organized, what's the mechanics of squeezing through the tissue, and then, of course, how do the cells find find the way to go. So we can image actin, which, of course, the quality of imaging here is much poorer than what I was used to when this glorious work on keratocyte was done by Julia and Kinnereth. This is, of course, 3D, and the embryo is breathing all the time. So far, we try to analyze these movies, and we notice that there's more actin at the front of the leader, and there's no noticeable flow of actin. We do know that comparing the level of protein expression in this cell relative to all other cells in surrounding tissues, we know that a molecule called RhoD is upregulated in those TVC cells, and this signaling molecule upregulates actin-based protrusions at the periphery of the cell. Actin-based protrusion is somehow important here. Then we roughly know what's the myosin distribution in this pair, and we know that at the tail of the trailer, there's more myosin than in the leader, and especially low myosin density is at the cell-cell junction. We started to model this group of two cells by using the so-called cellular pots model. I will mention soon the big drawbacks of this model, but it has some very clear advantages. It's very easy to model in three dimension, and also conceptually, it's a very simple and pleasing concept. You basically look at the balance of the surface energy generated by myosin tension. So basically, the surface is trying to acquire minimal area. The volume conservation energy, which implicitly determines the hydrostatic pressure inside those cells, and the adhesion energies. So we can vary the strength of adhesion between the leader and ECM, between the trailer and ECM, and between the cell-cell junction. And a couple of important points is that we also use the cellular pots model to describe the deformable endoderm above those cells. And we also use the effective energy, which is responsible for effective protrusion and retraction forces in the leader and the trailer. So without those forces, it's easy to imagine that the cells will look kind of like a double bubble adhering to the surface. But with those effective forces, the cells start moving in certain direction. And so also what's happening in this model is that the boundaries of the cell are trembling, and by minimizing the local energy of this trembling, they gradually move. So why we decided to use this model also is there are a number of indirect experimental observations in its favor. For example, we can inhibit adhesion of both cells to the ACM, and then what happens? The cells are kind of puffing up. The area of their adhesion to the ectoderm is shrinking. So intuitively, that's exactly what this model predicts, because the contraction then is trying to make the cells more spherical and minimize the area of the attraction to the endoderm. So there are a number of parameters in this model, but we can play with those parameters trying to reproduce the observed shape of the cell. This is just one example. We can play with cell-cell adhesion strength, and intuitively, if this adhesion is very weak, the cells just separate and go their separate ways. If this adhesion is too strong, then they start to move in a configuration which is not observed. So playing with this kind of experiments, we finally came up with a number of parameters that compare pretty well with the observations. So you see how a pair of cells looks very much like an experimental pair of cells, and actually some perturbations allow those cells to migrate separately, and we can also, with the same parameters, reproduce a single cell, just fitting the measured sphericity of the observed cells and the aspect ratio of those cells. So in the end of this kind of experiment, numerical experiments, we don't have any free parameters. So then the model predicts this very pleasing simulation movies of one cell moving on a flat surface, of two cells moving, and this side view just shows that there's actually this deformable layer of cells on top of them. So the question, of course, so far is just kind of reproducing the shape and movement, but what useful can this model tell us? So back to the question of what's the mechanism of collective polarization of the cell. Why is one cell a leader and another the trailer? So one possibility is that there's more protrusive activity in the leader cell. So we can make the numerical simulation upregulating protrusion in the trailer. So in the simulations that I showed you before, leader is protrusive and trailer is not. And so so the cells behave in a very intuitive way. Because of this newly acquired protrusion, the trailer tries to kind of go around the leader and then goes around the side. And so the cells start moving not in single file, but kind of more side to side. And experiments of upregulating rho D in both cells show that experimentally cells behave kind of the same way. They start to move more side to side. Another possibility is that there's a different cell to ECM adhesion. For example, this numerical simulation shows that if we weaken adhesion in one of the cells, then with high probability, this cell is becoming the trailer. So the leader needs stronger adhesion, which is again kind of intuitive, because to make new protrusion, you want to adhere. Of course, you have to remove those adhesions from the rear of the leader, but the trailer is pushing from behind and helping. So that's kind of the intuitive explanation for this result. And then experiment of inhibiting adhesions in one of the cells also show that if one of the cells is weak, adhering to the surface weaker, then with high probability it's becoming the trailer. So it doesn't. Those kind of experiments, numerical and real, don't yet prove anything, but they give you a hint that maybe somehow those cells polarize the protrusive adhesive activities. So one fun prediction of the model is that now if you decreasing adhesion in both of the cells, but in one of the cell it's still weaker than in another, then this weaker adhering cell, it doesn't want to stay on the surface at all anymore. It comes on top of the former leader and then actually overcomes the leader. And the result is this very strange tumbling movement. Some of the experimental micrographs show that the experimental cells do the same kind of stuff. And so then another very intuitive group of results shows sheds light on what's the mechanical design here. Like, why do the cell prefer to move together rather than alone? And what happens is that under the stiff endoderm, it's really the best if the cells move in this supracellular shape. I hope you saw from the experimental images before that the cells are really supracellular, not in the exact sense of Shavart and Mayer, but in the sense that the two cells kind of look like one cell, and there's just this boundary between them. So it turns out that in this geometry, the cells move in the fastest possible way for two reasons. One is the only resistance from the endoderm is now to the leader, and then the trailer simply helps. If cells move separately, then they have to both overcome the same resistance with resources of mechanical resources for only one cell. And it's really a little bit better to do this supracellular shape motility than simply two equivalent cells. There's not much difference, but there is a difference. And it's really better to move in single file rather than side to side. And this always, again, very intuitive. And the experiment indeed says that displacement of the two cells together is greater than displacement of cells, of single cells. So another constraint of the model is from this fascinating experiment. There are certain perturbations that make those two pairs of cells that move independently from each other to combine. So we can get many cases when three cells move together or even four cells move together. And the unexpected results from those observations was that cells always move in single file. But this is against the model prediction. If we don't change anything in the model that I showed you, the model predicts the movement in this kind of configuration when there's this one leader and then two trailers that are equal. And intuition behind it is very simple. It's like triple bubble to maximize the area of cell-cell contact while keeping the same free area and the same volume. This is the configuration that minimizes the sum of those energies. So we can do, of course, a lot of tricks trying to reproduce this single file motility. For example, one of the tricks, which of course is obvious, is to confer different effective driving forces to all the three cells. And then, of course, the fastest cell goes to the front, the slower cell goes to the rear. But this is very unsatisfying, right? Because we now have to start tinkering with the model, changing it for three cells. So obviously, this cellular POTS model misses something. Now, the main actually argument against this cellular POTS model that the forces in this model are not real. There's no actual physical balance of forces in the model. So what we believe is that the cellular POTS model just gives us some initial intuition, and ultimately we have to do some real mechanics with real force balances. And so how does what's the direction in which we are thinking? We actually are starting to think of the cells as a double bubble. It actually doesn't it's hard to see here, but basically the two moving cells, they look amazingly like double bubble which is sticking to the surface. And this is actually the triple bubble, which gives you intuition like why this cellular pods model doesn't really describe three cells moving together. And of course you can make these giant bubbles which are elongated and which are which have some internal surfaces and which start to look like three and four cells moving together. And so the idea we have, you probably saw that in all these cells, there's this curvature of the cell-cell junction suggesting that hydrostatic pressure in the trailer created by more myosin contraction there transduces the force to the leader, and this force is used to go through the resistance of the endoderm, so it's a little bit of like a rear wheel engine of the car. And so to start understanding the force balances, we use the same mathematics and physics that Javier just was talking about earlier, pretty much weighting model. We call it double bubble model, but it's all the same intuition. Looking at the shape of those cells, we can really find out what are the key tensions and forces here. And looking at the curvature radii, we can then compute pressures and see what it tells us. So, of course, other people used this kind of models before. Just a couple of examples. There's Sasha Verkovsky's model of keratocyte using this kind of weighting laws. And there's this model, which I love, of Tiny Liverpool showing how changing the weighting between the front and rear, you can make the cell move. Again, what Javier was showing for multicellular aggregates. So we are doing now basically the following exercises. We are taking images of these cells, and what can we get from those images? If we scale the tension in the dorsal surfaces by the tension in the leader, then measuring those angles, we can find out what is the tension in the trailer and the tension in the cell-cell boundary. And you can see that, satisfyingly, the tension in the trailer is a little bit higher than the tension in the leader, and the cell-cell boundary is under weak tension, which correlates well with the fact that myosin density is small there. And then also measuring the angles at which those surfaces meet the ectoderm, we can then, knowing those tensions, we can find the forces of interaction with the ectoderm. By the way, there's a strong experimental evidence that there's no adhesion between endoderm and those cells. So the only effect of the endoderm is to press. Right, all the interaction with the ectoderm is where the key propulsion and drag forces are. So this way of estimating the forces allows a very interesting way to see to do the sanity check, if it all makes sense. So we can measure in a way those tensions. We can measure those radii. So then we can. We can estimate the pressure in the trailer and in the leader. But then we also know this tension and this radius, so then we know the differential pressure between trailer and leader, which is a sanity check. And so measured from leader and trailer, the difference of tensions, so this way we estimate. Forget it. So we can measure this radius, which is here, and then we can estimate this radius from this differential pressure and measured tension, and it's very similar numbers. So looking at this image, all of this making sense. However, What we are doing recently is three-dimensional images of fixed cells, and looking at the cells into at the cells from the top, from the side, from the front, and from the rear, we can do much better measurements of all these angles and surfaces, and use the real 3D geometry. And these kind of measurements tell us some very surprising things. One is that there's almost no force at the front, which is very suggestive of the following, that there's no really active protrusion at the front. The protrusion of the leader is simply by hydrostatic pressure. So it's totally passive hydrostatic pushing forward. Another interesting point is that those three measured forces, they are all drag forces, resistive forces. We don't see the propulsion forces. And that's one of the puzzles that we are trying to solve. So all of this brings me to the following hypothesis. There are many different ways for the cell for the cells to move in 3D. So this is kind of keratocyte 2D movement. There's active actin-based protrusion at the front, and that's where propulsion is, because those protrusion adhesive structures allow the cell to grab the surface and do this. There's a drag at the rear, and of course you need myosin contraction in the bulk of the lamellipodium to bring forward the rear. Then there's the way cells move in 3D. That's kind of the similar to, I think, what Raphael was telling us earlier. The trick here is that there's a flow, a retrograde flow created by myosin, and this using this flow, the cell just paddles itself through the extracellular matrix, and the propulsion then at the sides, at probably some drag at the rear, and you don't really need protrusion this way as far as the volume of the cell is conserved. So what we're suggesting TVC pair is doing is there's this tension created by myosin in the dorsal cortices of this cell. And this tension creates the hydrostatic pressure, and that's what is responsible for protrusion. And the propulsion is probably at the sides of the leader cell, where we see the most of the lateral actin-based structures. And this is, of course, remains to be seen. So I wanted to finish with a couple of very brief things. One is we're still dealing with a lot of trouble in this kind of things, because three-dimensional measurements based on tens of images like that show very little differential pressure between the trailer and the leader. It has the right sign. The pressure in the trailer is bigger. But based on measurements of the cell-cell boundary, the difference should be order of magnitude greater than what we observe. And so what is probably happening, this is my favorite hypothesis, is that tension in the surfaces of this cell is not isotropic. There's this anisotropic stress fiber-like structures which are going this way from side to side of the cells. And in a way, these stress fibers just squeeze the cells into this tube-like structure. And this is my hypothesis of why these three cells and four cells are moving in single file rather than a big clump. So the last thing, how do the cells know where to go? So there are two interesting parts of this problem. One is how do they orient themselves in the right way? Another is where's the front and where's the rear as far as they orient correctly. So very titillating possibility for orienting the right way is the fact that the cells are not moving on a flat surface. So ectoderm, which is relatively rigid, it's curved like a ball. But in one direction in which the cells are moving, it's curved less than in the perpendicular direction. And so if you have this tensed multiple bubble, which has effective internal rigidity, you put it on adhering surface, which is curved, then it would orient itself so that its long axis is along this less curved direction, right? So it could be the curvature sensing that doing it. Now, where is the front and where is the rear? We know a little bit about it. It's chemorepulsion from the cells that are left behind, from these two ACM cells that were neighbors of these cells are left behind. So that's where we are. As again, as you saw, there are more questions than answers, but hopefully I conveyed the fascination with this interesting system. And again, the point is to start understanding multicellular migration from the bottom up, from just two cells. Thank you.
Thank you.